There once was a man named Gold Roger, who was king of the pirates. He had fame, power, and wealth beyond your wildest dreams. Before they hung him from the gallows, these were the final words he said.
Our perspective is yours for the taking, but you'll have to join us first. We left everything we debated at the Yonko table.
Ever since, pirates from all over the world set sail for the Grand Line, searching for the Yonko table, the table that will make their dreams come true.
Yo!
Yo, folks, welcome to the latest and the greatest from the Yonko table. That is the voice of Grandmaster Hoop coming at you from the cockpit of a Naboo starfighter, because that is the quintessential ship to our favorite Mandalorian, Din Djarin, and his newly adopted son, Grogu. That's right, folks. If you don't recognize those names, those are the two stars of The Mandalorian, the hit Star Wars show featured on Disney Plus that seeks to tell the tales of a Mandalorian by the names of Din Djarin and his newly adopted son, Grogu, as they venture through the galaxy far, far away. And we're here to talk about season three now. We have already talked about the premiere episode, and now we're back to talk about season three as a whole. And with me, as always, is the the Bo-Katan to my Din Djarin.
Ew!
It's fellow Yonko, Dr. Jace Attorney. Jace Attorney, why don't you want to be Bo-Katan? She's first, a leader. She's, you know, graceful. She's super cool. She can kick ass. You don't like that comparison?
Why don't you be Bo-Katan then?
I could be Bo-Katan. I have no problem being Bo-Katan.
Good.
Okay.
It's like the kids on the playground. I don't want to be the Pink Ranger.
All right. I forgot pink and yellow are designated female colors.
I want to be the Red Ranger. He's the leader.
Why do I got to be the Black Ranger? Is it because I'm black? That's fucked up. This is the world we live in.
This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
Very good. Are you happy to be here talking about Mandalorian?
I'm happy to be here talking about Mandalorian. Because I think we mentioned it in our first episode premiere. Second season of Mando had just finished when we first started the podcast, The Yonko Table.
It's true.
We didn't get to hop on the Mando, hype train at the time because, you know, it was already over and done with. So we kind of went on to more current shows that were airing at the time. But I'm excited to now have an excuse to talk about Mandalorian, specifically with season three. I have a lot to say about season three in comparison to the previous ones. I would say it's the weaker of the three seasons. While I don't think it's terrible, it had some missteps. There were plenty of weeks where I was like, I don't know. I just felt indifferent to what I was watching. And I never felt that way for prior seasons of Mandalorian. So I'm sure we'll get into the nitty gritty as we go along, but excited to talk about Mandalorian. But if it's in relation to specifically season three, it's like, yeah, this, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
It is fair. I agree. This is the weakest season of the Mandalorian. And, you know, I think we talked about it a little. I think this one had a lot of expectations going into it. It was about a 2-year hiatus between season two and season three.
What was it between one and two? Was it
one and two was a year apart because it was a launch title. They had filmed it in like 2018.
And so,
you know, season two was filmed in 2019. So it was ready by 2020. Then, you know, from there, 2021, I don't think we had any Mando, or no, I'm sorry, season two. No. We didn't have any Mando in 2021. Then we had Boba Fett at the end of 2021. That's what we got. That's what we were given.
You mean beginning, right? No. It started
Boba Fett
started in December.
Right. Yeah, and then it carried over into 2022, followed by Obi-Wan, and then followed by Andor, and then Mandalorian comes back 2023. So there's a lot of Star Wars content in between season two and three of Mandalorian. I think the biggest thing to look forward to was the fact that we were gonna get more Mandalore, more Mandalorians, and they delivered on that part. We spent a good couple episodes on Mandalore. We met a plethora of Mandalorians, some maybe with one line, some with more, and you know whatnot. But overall, yeah, let's just open the floodgates. You already said it's the weakest. I agree with you, it's the weakest. What's going on? What made it so weak? There's a lot of strong things going for this season, and then yet there's something that's disconnecting from the overall story of this season, and it shows, and oh man, it's got a lingering effect. I mean, let me first put up the borderlines of what we're working with here, right?
Mm-hmm.
We already talked about episode one. Din Djarin wants to get in the living waters, atone. That's his goal, right?
We initially thought this was going to be the entire season, or at least a good chunk of it.
Okay, you know what? That's a great place to start. Right. Right. That
I thought the journey
been...
was to get to Mandalore.
Right. We got to Mandalore like that, episode two.
And he went to the water, episode two.
He went in the water.
It's on the way back.
He did it. I mean, there was a couple of scruffles here and there. So, you know, there's his journey. It's done by episode two. Bo-Katan, she's a little pouty. Her whole thing is to retake Mandalore. And now she has to save Din Djarin's sloppy, dumb behind from, you know, getting captured in the mines. And, you know, she wants the Darksaber. Thought that might have been a nice journey throughout the season.
What, exploring Mandalore?
Her journey as far as acquiring the Darksaber. But interestingly enough, like, I think a lot of people thought there was going to be a duel between Din Djarin and Bo-Katan.
No.
Well, what happens episode two?
They had a technicality.
Well,
actually, I lost the Darksaber to the creature that took me underwater. And Bo-Katan actually, no. It was the weird droid. Yeah. I lost the Darksaber to that dude. And Bo-Katan saved me from that dude. So she defeated my captor. Therefore, the Darksaber is hers. Here you go, Bo-Katan.
That's it.
Yeah.
That technicality. And if you had spotted it early on.
I did not spot. I'm like, oh, gee, he got captured. That's it.
It's like almost anticlimactic to a point, because, you know, the whole concept of you have to duel for it. And I didn't spot the technicality either. So when they revealed it, I was like, oh, damn. They're right. That's an easy cop out for them not to fight. And part of me is like, that could have been a really nice growing conflict between the two, is that they would eventually have to come to blows if she truly wants to be the leader. And then that never happens.
Right. Because then you have the whole point of Din Djarin, like, not wanting to take the lead of the people of Mandalore and lead them to whatever salvation Bo-Katan thinks that they need.
Right.
But he can't just hand it over to her. He can't just be like, I don't want it. Here, take it. You have to fight for it. And she's going to know if he's actually trying, because if he half-asses in a fight, it's like, well, I didn't earn it. You weren't really trying in that fight.
And right.
That to me is a much more compelling story that I think, I don't want to say the writers did not know, because it's our Lord and Savior, Jon Favreau, who was writing this. I don't want to say he was incompetent to not write a story like that. I want to say he chose not to go in that direction, rather than he couldn't write something that compelling. But it then makes me beg the question, why did you choose to go that route then? Why did you choose to not have them face off against each other? Because your substitute that you had, which is the technicality, is not interesting.
Right.
And it doesn't help that the rest, a significant portion of the middle of this season was not interesting.
Yeah.
It was just, I wouldn't call it filler, but I don't know, man. I'm just watching it. Like nothing's like clicking for me. Nothing's clicking for me as I'm watching it. I don't get a wake up call until, I want to say, the finale. Yeah. I don't really open my eyes and watch what I'm watching with the Mandalorian season 3 until the final episode.
So what we're doing right now is we're setting up how there was a strong premise in the beginning and a strong, I was satisfied by the finale too. And then we're going to get into the in-between. The last person we got to talk about is Grogu. Did he have a story this season? He's back with Din.
And Gaga.
He cooed and Gaga. He did coo and Gaga a lot.
I had the subtitles on.
Grogu cooing.
Oh, great. Yeah. Thank God I caught that.
Right. I think there was an interesting story to be told with him being, again, this is a very Mandalorian-centric episode, season, so we got a lot of kind of the inner workings of, you know, the Watch, not Death Watch, the Watch,
right?
And then nothing else. There was like one episode with Grogu kind of becoming one of them,
right? I did like some of the, you know, some of the issues that they raised with Grogu becoming like a foundling and eventually an apprentice, an adopted son to Din Djarin. I just like, and this is a technicality, but it was, I feel like it was a good one where it's like Din Djarin wants to raise Grogu as his own, but in order to do that, he needs to cite the creed, and baby Grogu does not know how to talk. So he can't become. Exactly. And I kid you not. Oh my God, this is going to be so weird by the finale. I expected, like, I didn't think Grogu was going to like grow significantly in any way by the finale, but when we got to the finale, there were certain moments where Grogu's kind of like pushed against the wall, and I thought, is he gonna do something right here? Like, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but in the finale, when he's fighting off against the, or not even fighting, when he's like kind of dodging the blows from the they have names. Those red troopers and
the Praetorian Guards.
Praetorian Guards. When he was facing off against them, when he got separated from Din Djarin, I thought he was gonna do some Yoda shit. Like I thought he, because he's been jumping around and doing backflips this entire season. And I thought it was going to be something like, okay, Mando's handling the big guy, the big boy, Moff Gideon. We'll touch on Moff Gideon. Don't worry. But he's handling Moff Gideon, the big bad. And but Grogu got to handle his own. We got the Praetorian Guards. He's got to handle them. I thought he was going to do some crazy nonsense where, like, he grabs their weapons and, like, goes bananas with them. It would have been an ass pull, because it's like, wait, how did he learn to do this? As a baby? How did he learn to do this? I thought he was going to do it. I thought it was going to be something cool. With that said, when he, at the end, when the Forger was telling him, what was telling Din Djarin, nope, he can't be an apprentice. He cannot cite the creed. I thought Grogu was going to start talking backwards like Yoda.
Oh, boy.
Cite the creed, I can.
I think people are waiting for that to happen.
That would have been bad. Although, fun story about that, some people think Yoda is a troll because you know the female Yoda that
Yaddle.
Was part of the, what was her name? Yadu?
Yaddle, like Waddle.
Yaddle. She does not speak backwards.
Oh, you know what? She was just featured in some Tales of the Jedi.
She does not speak backwards like Yoda. So because it was always assumed Yoda, because Yoda was the only one, it was assumed Yoda's people speak backwards like that. But no, they don't. So it's just Yoda choosing to speak like this.
Maybe there's a reason.
Like, he's a troll. He's trolling.
Maybe, okay, he might be a troll. I like to think maybe that's just the way he was brought up. We need confirmation. We need confirmation.
We need confirmation.
But dang, I mean, if he should talk Grogu, I think that's a thing fans are waiting for. Didn't happen here. So what we just established, you know, there's three central characters, them three that we talked about. They each had a journey. Would you say all their journeys were fleshed out to the fullest? Because
when you
part
say
of me
all
is
three,
like,
you mean like Mando,
Mando, Bo, Grogu. Because what we're treated in the finale is that great shot of all three of them and Grogu protecting.
Oh, that
them.
Was nice. That was nice.
Right. And it was and, you
a
know,
reference
I feel like,
to Rebels, which you have not finished.
I have not finished Rebels.
There's a
no.
scene. There's a specific scene that people were saying, oh, there. That happened before. That happened before in Rebels.
Is that shot earned? Do you feel their journey should conclude in such an epic shot like that? Because for me, there's a lot of great things for all three of them, but it's not as great as it could have been. And it just felt like...
yeah.
Some of the writing choices here, I feel, are like almost going through the motions.
I think the characters in a way deserve that win at the end, like that money shot. But I feel like you don't get a lot of that in this particular season. So like Mando season one, season two. I'm like, okay, Mando deserves the world. Like, he deserves all the money shots. He deserves the hero poses. So when they get to this spot, I'm like, okay, yeah, he deserves it. I don't know if season three is where I would say, oh, man, season three solidified my thoughts on it. Because I feel like if you were to really home in on which character had the most development, it would be Bo-Katan.
Yes.
I think she had the most growth and in a way about equal screen time almost as Din.
I think this is her season. I think this season belongs to her.
Yeah, I think she deserves it. God, that small little shield though pisses me off. I hate that
oh,
she has
Oh God,
that shield.
Why?
It's small.
It's lightweight. They're light
when
on their
she,
feet.
When she puts that in front of them to shield against the fire at the very end, I'm like, assuming Grogu was not there, that was not protecting anyone. I don't know what waste. A waste. Either way, I feel like this was her season. Yeah. She was definitely the spotlight. Her coming to terms with like what her people want. And in unifying the Mandalorians, because even as far back as the prequels, these bastards were always fighting each other. Like, they had civil war after civil war. And the Forger, in all of her wisdom...
I gotta correct you. The Armorer. The Armorer.
The Forger.
You know, I'm warning you. It's the Armorer.
Star Wars fans are gonna come after
me. It's the Armorer.
And the Armorer.
You owe it to her because we saw her in person.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yep.
Yeah, she did the line.
She was at MegaCon.
Right. She, in all her wisdom, tells Bo-Katan, like, only you can unite these people. So take off that damn helmet and stop pretending to be us.
don't do her like that.
What?
She wasn't pretending. That was a really good moment. Kind of.
Go ahead.
Okay. Very unexpected.
Sell it to me.
Bo-Katan inadvertently swims in the living waters. And just like Din Djarin, when she went in, she had her helmet on. And from there, she had not taken it off. And by doing so, she practiced the way of the watch and becomes one of them.
last thing on her to-do list, the last thing she probably ever wanted is to, you know, she calls them fanatics. And now she's all alone. And these are the only people who are, like, I guess, here. So it's now she's at this crossroads where she's like, well, damn, I've called them fanatics all my life. Let me see what kind of their side is like. It's very kind of, I don't want to say like Avatar, like Jake Sully, you know, being introduced to the tribe. I don't want to call it Dancing with the Wolves either, but that's very much what it's like. She finds herself in this cult, quote unquote, whatever you want to call it, cult religion. And she never wanted to be here, and she's doing it, and she's actually trying to learn and listen. You didn't buy into that?
I mean, I bought into it. And maybe I over exaggerated when I said the armorer said, take that damn thing off. I ultimately felt like she in a way she kind of did tell her that. I remember the scene. It's the one where they're by themselves and they're like, I think the armorer says something like, she doesn't say, do you trust me? She says like, do you, something about her authority, like, you know, do you acknowledge that it's just me and you here and I have this infinite wisdom or whatever. I don't remember the exact quote, but she says something along those lines and Bo-Katan's like, yeah. And then her next line is, take that damn thing off.
Fair. Take it off. Okay. So I think this season did kind of good with is kind of these clashing ideologies, because, you know, the armorer, Din Djarin, did you take your helmet off? You're excommunicado. You gotta bathe in the waters, you know? And the armorer is a character who I think also gets a good amount of kind of development. Very set in her ways in season one and two, the little that we see of her. And then, you know, here's Bo-Katan. Lady Bo-Katan Kryze.
Oh, God. I finally know her full freaking name by the end of this season.
Right. And so it's an interesting point of view for her now to recognize that our differences, yes, we can recognize how different we are. That doesn't that mean we need to close ourselves off to one another, which is very much what that covert was doing. You know, if you ain't the watch, you gotta go. And then she drops the line, Bo-Katan walks both worlds. She will be the one to unite Mandalore and all the tribes.
Why does she talk like this? Oh my gosh. She had a lot more dialogue than probably all the seasons combined.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And then that sets up kind of the next arc is Bo-Katan is going to be the leader and she's got to bring the tribes together. What do you think of that kind of journey for her, bringing the tribes together? Because Armorer sets it up perfectly.
She does. I like, you see, when this little arc started kicking off, I think I briefly told you about this, but I didn't tell you the whole thing. When this little arc of her trying to unite Mandalore and, you know, it was building up to a potential takeover, a reclamation of Mandalore, because as we know, Mandalore was abandoned. It was supposedly uninhabitable, but Din Djarin's ventures into Mandalore prove that no, there are still plenty of people, which makes me wonder, like, has no one just gone back to check? Like, it's just, oh my God, it's so aggravating. It's whatever. It's Star Wars, whatever. But immediately I started thinking, like, okay, this is clearly building up to a potential resurgence of Mandalore. Maybe not to the degree it was in the Clone Wars, where it's like a thriving metropolis, but it's gonna start building up from here. Wherever we end up at the end of the season, you know, before even the finale came in, I was like, we're gonna end up with a Mandalore that is going to regrow and prosper. But if they do that, where are we going to end up when it comes to the sequel trilogy? And I understand the sequel trilogy never bothered. Like, the Mandalorian storyline was not even a twinkle in those writers' eyes when they were writing the sequel trilogy. But for it to be a continuous mythos that, like, interlocks all the different, you know, previous trilogies and future trilogies, it's like, if Mandalore was growing again, where were they when the First Order, who are remnants of the Empire that subjugated them, where were they in the sequel trilogy? And again, they have room to explain what was going on, but you see what I mean? Like, that's my mind thinking about this. Like, oh, that's cool, we're going to retake Mandalore and everything. But then in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, but wait a minute, this is post-original trilogy, pre-sequel trilogy. I don't know how this makes sense. If Mandalore comes back, where were they in the story?
Well, so, you know, given the finale, and yes, I really try to separate the sequel trilogy from all things Star Wars.
You can't, because now they're continuing it with the announcements.
I hate it so much. I mean, y'all should go check out our deep dives on the sequel trilogy. We did all 7, 8, and 9. But there is a 30-year, about another 30 years between, you know, the events of Mando to the sequel trilogy. Yeah. Right. So we have some time, and I imagine in future Mandalorian seasons, you know, maybe we'll touch upon that, because, you know, not only do we get the reclamation of Mandalore, but we now do get inklings of the Empire, and very much, it's not so cut and dry. The, you know, the Death Star blew up. That doesn't mean the Empire is still not, you know, crawling and waiting for the lights to turn off to appear again. I mean, we've seen a bit of, we've seen it throughout the Mandalorian, but now it seems like there are really bigger things in play. And that was kind of the B side of season 3. I'd hardly call it a B side. More like a C side.
Like a B plot? Is that what you mean?
Well, no, it just I want to. Okay, so let's talk about it. So there's remnants of the Empire, right? Okay. I think episode 3 was the biggest thing we got of it, where I think it was Dr. Pershing, the scientist.
God. Yeah, Dr. Pershing.
I know we talked about it a little bit. What, you didn't like that episode? What's going on?
Well, I think I liked it in the moment, right? Like, sure. I was liking what I was watching because it was different. It was like, wow, there's no Mando in this episode, but we're dedicating all this time to this guy. And it's like, where are they going to go? Because they addressed something that was, I think, they didn't have to address it, because I was thinking, you know, Star Wars is never going to talk about something this deep. But they did. And I was like, oh, okay, which is, you know, there were people that worked for the Empire that the New Republic enlisted, and they kind of have them in like a re-education program. It's not like they just, all right, I guess I'll go work the fields on Tatooine. I used to be a medical analyst in the med bay on the Empire's Death Star, but I'll go to Tatooine now. Like, no, I like the fact that they even entertained this type of plot in Star Wars period. Like, there are people that had to be re-educated, and they fit them into the New Republic's, I guess, regime, or however you want to call it. Like, reintegrate them to be functional, I guess, citizens in the new order of the galaxy. That's what I like that concept alone. I was liking it, and the more it went on, I was like, man, this is really long. They really want me to pay attention to what's going on here. And it had an ending, right? It had that ending where, you know, the girl, I don't remember the girl's name.
Elia Kane.
Elia Kane.
That's her character name?
That's her character's name.
Elia Kane. Okay, so Elia Kane, who, again, Pershing and Elia, they were previous remnants of Moff Gideon's squad, who Moff Gideon is hinted at going to trial on a spaceship. Ooh, but where is he? Ooh, he went MIA. Ooh. So they have this thing going on, and it makes it seem like, you know, they... like they're having feelings at first, or they're being flirtatious. I don't know, but Pershing has the cloning technology, and he's like, "Yeah, I know cloning information. I want to help the New Republic. I want to prove to them that cloning can still be used for good. It's the Empire that did it for evil." And I was like, "Okay, cool." They went through this convoluted ass plot to get the cloning tech that he had on the Empire ship, wherever the hell that was. And then they put him in a mind flayer because he wasn't... clearly, he wasn't taught. No means no when it comes to the as a cloning technology. And he's like, what is this? What are you doing? And the... What is it? The Dr. Akbar. Dr. Akbar.
Oh, God. That's racist. Not every Mon Calamarian is related to Akbar.
He's like, in lower voltages, oh God, I sound like Yoda. In lower voltages, the mind flayer can actually have some positive effects on the human mind. We will turn it only up to 2. He turns it up to 2. And then they leave it. They just leave him there during a medical procedure, and they leave the girl there, and she's like, I want to be here for my friend. That bitch cranked it up to 11.
Oh, the goodness.
Max settings. Mind flight. Did this guy die or something? Like, is...
Okay. Let me say this. I agree with you. It's cool to see Star Wars tackle these issues. Apparently, these are things they tackle in Andor.
I was going to say, that's like, does Andor, is that why people like Andor? Because it tackles like new things in Star Wars? I think people
do watch Andor for this stuff. It's a little egregious here just because it's such a stark contrast to what The Mandalorian is.
I feel like it was a different show almost.
It felt like a backdoor pilot to...
they should have just
the life
that.
Of the life and times of Dr. Pershing. But I'm glad they're tackling these things, because they definitely built up the New Republic to be nothing but these kind of self-absorbed bureaucrats a little bit, and they're not even seeking... yes, the Empire was, and they have good tech, they were doing good things, and yet they're like, nope, all Empire stuff's gotta burn, it's gotta go
burn.
But then I think with the twist with Elia Kane, I don't get it. I don't know if Pershing's alive. I don't know why he had to be caught. I don't know why she sold him out. I'm so confused.
It's the cloning tech he found at the ship or the facility, whatever.
Why even let him go there then if you were just going to have him arrested in that cloning tech confiscated?
My thing is like, you told what could have been done in like 20 minutes. You dedicated an entire episode to, and it's never touched on again. Like, her story, because like, then the thing is, the reason why it's a problem is because they dedicated a whole episode to it. That almost lends itself to making me believe that, okay, we're going to be seeing this character a lot, probably. Almost like a Game of Thrones style, where maybe they're going to jump between different characters and kind of, you know, like Game of Thrones, like follow the characters through their own individual journeys. And at by the finale, all their, you know, separate journeys converge into one. They cross paths. And it's like this epic finale, like exactly like how Game of Thrones does it. But you just get that one episode and you don't hear from her again. You probably see her again for like 30 seconds in like episode 5 or 7, whatever. And that's it. I'm like, what was the point? Like, this is what I mean. In the moment, I enjoyed the episode. But then the more we went along the season, I started thinking that episode was a waste of time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because ultimately, it doesn't progress anything. It just shows that all Moff Gideon's minions are still doing evil things. Thanks for letting me know.
I have a solution with the kind of Game of Thrones idea overall. I briefly mentioned this to you outside the pod. And yes, that could have definitely worked here. Like, there was no need to spend the whole like 40 minutes with them. And then, yeah, it's just like they set up good things and that story wasn't really picked up upon. The mere mention of cloning is only significant in one moment. And again, it doesn't even seem that grand because I'm pretty sure we knew Moff Gideon was trying to clone or like being able to produce living things and be able to embed like the force in them.
Was he doing that in the prior seasons?
I don't remember what
his goal was. Like, I thought it was just evil.
No, the goal he said it at the end of this season. He said,
well, this season, yeah.
But no, that was always his goal. He wanted to extract. I mean, I guess at this point it'd be midichlorians. And
right. He isolated the midichlorian technology he just isolated that gene. He's like, all right, I found it, baby. Now I could clone four sensitive Moff Gideons.
Yes, that's his goal. And it's just like, I don't know, because I don't even remember Dr. Pershing ever having cloning stuff in the first season. So it just seemed like something forced. It was like a good idea, but it felt forced. And to spend so much time with them, it to amount to nothing, really, it was just kind of a letdown. And there's a lot of points in this season where it felt like if they treated it like Game of Thrones, it would have made a lot more sense. For example, did you realize the pirates were tied to Moff Gideon?
They were?
Yes.
In what way?
He like hired them or something.
To attack Navarro?
Yes, or something. I'm pretty
For
sure.
What?
They said that in the finale.
I don't remember.
And
God,
when I heard that, I was like, there was no breadcrumbs to make you think the pirates were here for any other reason but to be pirates.
Yeah, I just thought they controlled the sector and that was the end of it.
There was something, and it's kind. I feel that's kind of what the season, the last two episodes of this season would make you think they're tying everything together. And then it's just like, I didn't know there was a string to be tied.
I didn't know. I didn't know that either. I mean, the thing is, I feel like part of the problem is the whole thing with Moff Gideon. I feel like they held the reveal of Moff Gideon returning too close to their chest for too long. They held onto it for too long. That Moff Gideon, like that first scene of Moff Gideon, like giving the speech to all those other
Imperials.
Those other Imperials, which by the way, one of them was a Hux.
So one of them was a Hux. Yep.
Wow. No, look at that. A relation. Another callback to the sequel trilogy. Ooh. We're coming back full circle, baby. But that scene, or some, maybe even not that scene, if they really wanted to save it for like a finale, something on that level needed to happen. I want to say by episode two, I think you need to really understand like what is at stake for the season so that you can kind of touch, like you want to see the journey for all the characters where, how it ultimately is going to end up with them, you know, clashing by the end of it. This whole Moff Gideon thing, I just feel like the first half is just Mandalorian, culture, which is fine. But I feel like in a way it's aimless because I don't know where the story is going in that scene. Compare that to seasons one and two, right? Where in seasons one and two, and again, I'm just going to intermix both of them together. What sure. I recall from seasons one and two was that, you know, the immediate goal was to get Grogu from point A to point B, right? To uncover whatever mystery is behind Grogu. Where is he from? Where do I got to take him? Stuff like that. But as early as episode one, even in season one, you knew there was something with the Empire or remnants of the Empire where they're like, they're going to come back and come after this kid. But why do they want him? What were they using him for? And who are they going to send to capture this kid again? Obviously, the story changes from season one to season two, but you always knew where it ultimately was going from the beginning. With season three, that Pershing episode does not tell me anything. It just tells me, oh, Moff Gideon's henchman, she's being a bitch to this guy. She's mind flaying him.
Oh, Moff Gideon, he's probably alive. And
he's
kicking.
Probably alive. But we don't know that until like 5-6 episodes into the season. And it's like, I did not like how they spaced out this episode. There were some where it felt like filler. Do you know what I'm going to say?
Yes, I think it's episode 6.
The Jack Black and Lizzo.
It
was filler. And again, I love me some Jack Black. Lizzo indifferent too, just because I don't really know Lizzo like that. But Jack Black, oh my God, always up for some Jack Black. But I know he geeked out at the opportunity to appear in Star Wars.
Sure.
As anyone would. But it's like, what was this excursion? This was like a little mini mystery with the head of security.
Oh, do you recognize the head of security?
Is he the guy from Space Force, the doctor?
I don't know about Space Force. You're thinking of John Malkovich. That's Doc Brown. That's
I did recognize it. Yes. I didn't recognize it at first, and then by the end of it, I'm like, I know who that guy is. Who is he?
He's old. He's old now.
This
episode, I'm going to give a hot take real quick.
Hot take.
I don't like seeing big name stars in roles like this where you can clearly tell it's that big name star.
Like, I don't feel like that's a hot take. I feel like that's kind of, it's kind of like, like Game of Thrones. Oh, God.
What, Ed Sheeran?
Ed Sheeran in Game of Thrones. Yes. I feel like that is purposeful. Like, you want people to be immersed in the world that's going on at the moment. That's why whenever they do these trilogies, they always go for I don't want to say no-name actors, but, like, you know, people with, like, low fame in the industry at the time, you know. Hey, your Hayden Christensen's, your Mark Hamill's, your Daisy Ridley's, your John Boyega. They want people that are not going to have an effect that you just described right now. They don't want to cast Eddie Murphy as Finn in the sequel trilogy, because all you're going to see is Eddie Murphy in Star Wars.
Right. And they felt their characters just felt like caricatures.
Yes.
And I also did not like how Lizzo was petting and feeding Grogu like a
dog.
Yeah, I was like, that's a boy. That's a young boy. What are you doing? It was weird. And yes, it was filler because this bothered me because, one, I didn't think that mystery was so good at all. With the droids
was
acting.
Was it so obvious? Oh, I like that we got to see droids again.
I like seeing droids. I did not like seeing them like that.
What, like as servants?
It was just they're just there. It was weird. It was weird. It was
what was weird to me was how a super droid was sprinting and doing backflips and being agile as hell when they were running away from Bo Catan and Din. And I'm like, when the hell have they ever done this in the prequels? Those super droids only walked with their back straight and their wrist going forward for laser shots. They did not sprint and run like that in the prequels.
In Battlefront 2, they would make you think they could sprint.
Could they sprint? Oh, yeah. No, they could. They could sprint. They could sprint.
They could sprint to a degree. I mean, yeah, it was cool, but like it didn't amount to anything. And then, you know, what's weird is when you try to throw in filler and then try to put plot and continuity at the end of the episode.
What, like, at I was the like, end of this one?
At the end of the episode, Bo fights Wolf.
That does happen. Yeah. Because that was the goal the entire time. But you had to finish this quest. This side quest.
It's a legit side quest.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's not, I felt it wasn't even a good side quest. We can have such a more rich, deeper story if you let Bo try to talk to this dude, try to get her people back. Because those were Bo's people. Originally. That was her squad.
And which I like how they never addressed again. Like, you left me. Like, you left me and I've been sitting in that chair by myself on that weird planet in that palace by myself, and you left me.
I think there could have been so much richer content here. And then again, this is where the technicality was brought up, and then boom, Bo's quest to reunite the tribes is like over.
Yeah,
that was it.
That was it. She just brought them. She brought them back to the watch, and she's like, "All right, kids, play nice." And there was like one or two scuffles, but they got over it pretty quickly.
And that's another thing. I was like, "Yes, show me that it's not clicking. Show me that they need a leader." It was I think it was the dude Wolf and Paz Vizsla.
That's the
big guy.
The tank.
Yeah, the tank. And they were playing chess. And yeah, they start scrapping. I was like, this makes sense. They're two religious extremes on the, you know, and right. They're not going to gel. And then who's the one that breaks it up?
Was it Din?
It's Grogu in the IG-12.
He does. No.
I was like, I mean, great moment for Grogu. I love that for him. But like,
right.
Leaders, what are y'all doing? Can y'all address the elephant in the room? We may be different, but we're all Mandalorian.
I feel like they ultimately got to that point at the end. Just not ideal. Yeah. I get it. They should have had a couple moments like this. But you can't have episodes like that because you have side quest filler episodes like Jack Black and Lizzo and Dr. Pershing.
So strange.
Very weird. But I mean, by the end of it all, you know, they're united and they go on to Mandalore to reclaim it. They find other people that are living on Mandalore.
There are still Mandalorians here.
Which, again, I'm just like, did no one come back here? Like, everyone just assumed, yep, the Empire destroyed it. It's uninhabitable. Okay, did you go back? No.
It's unbreathable.
It's unbreathable.
Did you check?
No.
That R5 unit, it took him 2 seconds to tell them. That air is breathable.
That's it. And it's like, you would like the only thing you could even argue to say why they believe that was in the original trilogy, you could argue that Mandalore was probably an Empire space when the Empire was like at its, you know, prime, its peak. And you could not get to Mandalore without coming across the Empire. And then they would likely kill you for getting close to Mandalore. Right, but the Empire is dead. The remaining Mandalores did not care. The Mandalorians, they did not care to go back to their home planet that they were infatuated with. they don't want to go and just see, like, I don't know. Maybe there's people living there. Maybe it wasn't enough. I don't even know. I feel like I'm beating a dead horse at this point.
It makes sense. Again, I feel Favreau and Filoni do a great job at kind of setting up the goalpost and major pillars of what this show is. And then, man, I just feel they dropped the ball in a lot of places.
Yes.
I have no idea. So what? Are we to assume, because no one has checked, obviously. The only person who thought to check was Moff Gideon, who's also infatuated with Mandalorian culture.
And apparently more than Mandalorians, because he's the only one that went back.
He's the only one that went back. And then on top of that, too, he finds all this Beskar. And now he upgrades these stormtroopers. And now they have Beskar armor and jetpacks. And they're basically Mandalorians.
Essentially.
Y'all could have been great, but you let this man beat you to it.
He set up shop and everything. He had a base technology doing the clone stuff. That was so weird seeing like a half naked Giancarlo. in those tubes. And then we opened his eyes. I'm like, oh God, please just blow it up. Hurry up.
It's gotta go.
It's like, you know, this is my thing. I feel like people are going to pay attention to like the last two episodes of this season and say it was the best season ever because
they were great episodes. They were great episodes.
And like they name drop a lot of things that like it makes you ask like, okay, the future of Star Wars is good because where are they going to go with this? They threw around Admiral Thrawn's name.
They did. They know what they're doing at this point.
They know. This is literally like MCU levels of like name dropping and making things like different projects tie together. You name drop Admiral Thrawn because they're like, oh, Admiral Thrawn is coming back. Okay, but when? When is he coming back? I don't know, but he's coming back. I've heard the rumors. So you know, like, okay, Admiral Thrawn's gonna be a thing at some point, but Moff Gideon is not gonna wait for some blue guy to come in and overtake his spot. He's gonna be like, no, I will lead us into greatness. So it makes me wonder, like, okay, so if he was gonna make a bunch of Moff Gideon's like force sensitive, what was he gonna do with that? You know, like give them all lightsabers, kyber crystals. You got to get kyber crystals for lightsabers. Or are they just like, what is he doing? I just have so many questions.
I think, you know, I think their goal, you know, Moff Gideon, he's a great villain. He's definitely imposing, you know.
Yes, I like his presence every time he's on screen. Perfect.
Yes. But, you know, with that said, we don't get much from, you know, kind of why he's got this vendetta against Mandalorians. We don't understand. Yeah, like you said, we don't know his overall goal. Obviously, he wants to stay in power. But it's like, okay, so what? You have clones that can use the Force. Are they going to be just your muscle? Like, what is your ultimate end game here?
Yeah, what is this? What's going on?
We don't get much of that or hardly any. And now he's gone. Yeah. The big bad, he's out. We got two episodes of this season with him.
He's gone.
And he's gone. There's no way he survived. There's no way.
I mean, was he just engulfed by fire or something?
I mean, I guess if that armor is truly strong, yes, he could survive. But, you know, they were like, we got to take Moff Gideon out or this will never end. He's going to keep coming back. Very much like... I keep hunting you and your family, Jake Sully. If you don't kill me now.
Jake Sully?
Oh, Avatar, Way of the Water.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, no, the final fight was cool. I like
final
seeing,
fight was
like,
cool.
Moff Gideon do his thing, Grogu doing his thing, Force jumping around. That's all he knows. Give this kid a weapon at this point.
He held his own, though.
He held his own. I know he could have done it a lot better against those guards. Those
with a weapon.
Yes. If it, with a weapon, because I knew that IG 10 or 11 model is not going to help him whatsoever. It's just, oh, you don't want to float around in that little bubble? Well, here you go. You got a walking droid. Like
we've upgraded from the bubble to the droid. Yes,
right. And it just didn't do enough. It didn't do enough. I wanted to see that little bastard. Like, if it's not even a lightsaber, just give him a katana, man. I don't know. Be stupid with it. Be dumb.
I think we're on our way. I think he's been growing ever so much. Like, he's literally in it now. He's in it.
He is a Din Grogu now.
Right. Din Grogu. I always assumed he was already his official adopted son, but I guess
I didn't really need this whole adoption thing. I thought it was figuratively he was his son, but I thought everyone accepted like, oh yeah, that's your kid.
Yeah. I didn't think they had to put a title on it. You know,
it's official now.
Sure. Cool. Sure. I mean, on the topic of Grogu, some things. There's not much to talk about this season. It's very. It feels very quick because not much happens. Bo-Katan has the biggest story. We talked about the remnants of the Empire. Good things he did with that. We talked about, you know, the covert, whatnot. Speaking on Grogu, we got a little bit of his flashback. Now I'm just gonna throw some things that we missed. Remember, we got his flashback, rescue from Order 66. Cool scene.
Wow, I completely forgot about that.
That happened.
Why did I forget about that? I really feel like that was like a season ago.
That I'll tell you why you probably think it happened a season ago. It is damn near identical, like from Grogu's point of view, seeing all the Jedi being killed by the stormtroopers before he's rescued. It's almost the same shot from Obi-Wan when the kids are like looking through the door. It's almost the same shot. People say, oh, another Star Wars show, another flashback of Order 66.
You know, that's becoming a joke in the community now where it's no longer impressive for people to survive Order 66, because they show they'll go on the Star Wars wiki and then they'll show like the list where it says Jedi confirmed to have died in Order 66, and it's like, in terms of confirmed, like you saw them get shot and everything, there's like maybe 5-7 names on that list. And then right below that, it says all confirmed Jedi to have survived Order 66. And it's like, boom, 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 boom. Like there's like 30, 40 of them.
That's funny.
You know, they're showing. I feel like they saw the reaction of fans whenever they just showed a glimmer of Order 66 in different Star Wars media. Like they showed it in Mandalorian. They showed it in Jedi Fallen Order. They showed it. I think they showed it in Star Wars Rebels too.
Kanan has a backstory with that.
Yeah. No, they did. They did. I remember now. Yeah. Kanan. Yeah. So I feel like people's reactions are typically positive to Order 66 flashbacks, but Disney or Lucasfilm, whatever it is, they don't know how to use that in
using it too much now. Yeah,
they're using it too much to where now it's not eliciting the same emotions where whenever we would see it. I saw that Order 66, like literally what you said, I mixed it with whatever other Order 66 scenes that we've already seen.
They're all becoming very similar. Yeah.
And it's like, it was cool to see the Jar Jar Binks guy reprise, play an already established character.
He was reprising that role. So Ahmaud Best Kelleran Bach is the name of the Jedi. He played that Jedi on this. It's on Disney Plus. I think it's called the Jedi Temple Academy.
Kid show. The kid show.
Oh,
okay, you're right. Yeah.
And then I just saw an interview. They're like, it was a no-brainer to cast him because on that kid show he's teaching younglings. So they said, oh, the teacher of younglings. Let's have him save Grogu.
Right.
Very great moment for him. Given,
I'm sure,
you know,
for him, yeah, that
everything, right?
Given the history,
right? Oh God, yeah. So yeah, great moment for him, but yeah. The only thing I know, other than Episode 5, the only other great piece of Order 66, like the greatest, is the Clone Wars finale, because, and I say this because, obviously we grew with those clones like Rex and all of them, and then Ahsoka. So watching her go through that was amazing. All these flashbacks are just like, oh, Jedi down, clone dead, we gotta go, and that's it. There's, if you're gonna lean into Order 66, you got to lean into it, because I don't know, I just feel at this point it's like, it's eye candy. It's literally like, let's get it in there, check off list, and bam, move on.
Too much.
And then also, nothing came from that flashback.
Yeah, why'd they show that?
I think it was supposed to help Grogu start accepting himself as a foundling, but we really have no idea the lengths to what that did for him as a character.
Yeah, because I thought that where that flashback ended, it ended with, you know, Ahmaad Best's character, he escaped with Grogu alive. I thought he was gonna die, but he was alive, escaping with Grogu, and he's like, oh, Grogu, we gotta leave Coruscant, and then that's it. You don't get anything else. What happened to him? Did he just leave Grogu somewhere? Did he die eventually? Like, what happened? No, it's just random Grogu flashback of Order 66, because everyone loves Order 66. Everyone loves it.
Yeah. It's just like, there was a lot of good things in this season. Okay. The Mythosaur.
What was the point?
I thought he was going to come and save the day. When that big thing jumped out of the, like, out of the planet in the finale.
I thought that was the Mythosaur too.
It was the Mythosaur.
Because no one believed them. No one believed that the Mythosaur, like you say, Bo-Katan Kryze, you have seen a Mythosaur, the legendary Mythosaur that is legendary because it is never seen in myths and legends. when she was asking Bo-Katan that, she's like, yes. Yes.
Yes. Believe me or don't. Come on, bitch.
Take off your helmet.
Oh, man. I thought there was going to be this really cool, I don't know. I mean, maybe they're really leading and building something with the Mythosaur.
Or maybe when they're all in the water, you know, like they're in the water. Well, okay, maybe at the ending was hinting at it, right?
Yes. Like, Grogu made a connection with him.
You know, I thought Grogu made a connection, but then it didn't flash back to Grogu when you saw the eye open up of the Mythosaur.
Right.
You didn't see like Grogu be like, goo goo gaga. Like, I don't know. You didn't see him like do
no,
anything.
You didn't. Right.
So I don't know. Maybe he did or maybe he didn't. But I imagine the Mythosaur will wake up finally and just get out of the water. I don't know why it's asleep under the water.
I don't know how it's living. I don't know what it's doing. I don't know how deep that thing is, because that thing looks ginormous.
Yeah.
So it's there. I would hope in the next season, yeah, they're going to do something with it. You know, I enjoyed spending time with the covert. I like watching Bo navigate through the covert. But I imagine in season 4, I can't imagine, just because y'all took Mandalore, that it's going to be easy from this point on. Like, it's got to come with some issues. Like,
right. Because the thing now is, you know, I would like to think Moff Gideon is dead. You know, I know the whole thing of like, but where's the body?
Sure.
Again, you know, how far did his technology of the Force go with like how much because my thing is, I think they wanted to set this up to make the sequel trilogy make more sense with the whole thing with Sidious returning and cloning technology and the Metachlorians. So it's like you literally setting up like, I guess, the predecessor to that by having the Empire delve into cloning technology, isolating the Force gene, Metachlorians.
I made Snoke. I guess that makes sense now.
What if they learn he made Moff Gideon too? I was Moff Gideon all along.
Oh, I mean, I don't think that. I think more like Moff Gideon was on the right track for something huge, as far as cloning goes. And if they really could isolate that gene, it makes sense that a character like Snoke could be made, you know.
Right.
Especially because we saw all the other clones in Rise of Skywalker. But it irks me to think that they're really trying to just build and try to make the sequel trilogy make more sense. I like what they're doing here. I rather them focus on that and nothing more. Like, for example, how'd you feel about Paz Vizsla this season?
Paz Vizsla?
The tank.
Oh, I mean, he was fine.
Did you like his character growth?
Like he started off as like untrustworthy, or he was very strict with the creed, right?
He's strict with the creed, but also, you know, he challenged Din Djarin for the saber, you know.
This season?
No, that was in Boba Fett.
Okay. That's right. I remember that.
Mando,
it just happened out of nowhere. He's like
Mando 2.5.
Right.
Yes. To where now he's like, they saved my son, Bo-Katan and Din Djarin. I'll fight with them. And then he goes out in the noble sacrifice. It was cool. I like that stuff. I like that stuff. Play with these characters. I feel they're not doing enough of what they got. Like Bo's little right hand girl.
I don't know her name. I know what you're talking about. It's a face that I remember where I'm like, oh yeah, she's on Bo-Katan squad. Never addressed in terms of like confronting her on why they left or anything.
Nothing. Play with these characters. Like you have a mess of characters. Grief Karga's back.
That was nice to see him again.
Nice to see him, yeah. Actually,
we shook his hand.
We did, Carl Weathers. We shook his hand. We did. I like him behind the directing chair more than I like Grief Karga at this. I mean, I like Grief Karga, but
he directs.
He directed two episodes, not this season. One episode this season.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yes, he did one episode this season. He directed
episode
The Foundling. So the episode where they go rescue Paz Vizsla's son.
Okay, that's cool.
He directed that flashback, the Order 66 flashback.
Okay.
So yeah, he's here. Navarro. Mando's got a home now on Navarro.
Yeah, he's got a small plot of land. I feel like you just end the series there, in all honesty.
Some people said that. Some people said this feels like a perfect ending.
Yeah, he's happy with Grogu. Grogu torturing a frog.
Right.
No psychotic tendencies whatsoever. And yeah, you could end it there because the further along you push this, it's like, okay, where were these characters later on? You could honestly end it here. If Dave Filoni wanted to, he could. But I imagine in setting up a Mandalore of like resurgence, either there has to be a season 4 to touch on that, or there may be a separate Star Wars series that touches on the resurgence of Mandalore. And maybe Din Djarin will make cameos every now and then in separate Star Wars media. I think you could end it here for because the villain's done. He's done. The villain from one through three seasons was Moff Gideon.
You're going to have to create a new threat. Yeah.
A new threat that's just as captivating as Giancarlo, which is very difficult.
You know what it sounds like? And we can kind of talk about
more. Did a clone survive?
Oh, possibly. That's a thing.
That's going to suck. I swear.
I don't want
back
that.
With the, he comes back with the broken Darksaber that was left behind that and he crushed.
Or it's like, we did extract enough midichlorians from young Grogu over there. Come here. And he uses the Force.
Grogu, Gaga.
I mean, they could do that. I don't think I would
want
to.
They could.
What it sounds like, though, I think there is going to be a season four. But what it really does sound like, because, okay, so, you know, they announced the Mandalorian verse movie is going to be a thing directed by Filoni.
Oh, I heard something about Filoni directing like a film, but what is it?
It's a Mandoverse film.
Oh, but it's not it could be about Mando, but it's not he did this Mandoverse, him and Dave Favreau.
Him and John Favreau.
Yeah, what I call them. I combined their names.
You combined. The projects include Mandalorian, Boba Fett, Ahsoka, and Skeleton Crew, which has not come out yet.
What about the Acolyte?
The Acolyte is not Filoni and Favreau.
Oh, so Filoni and Favreau are only involved with those that you just mentioned.
Correct.
The Acolyte is its own separate thing.
Own separate thing. Just like how Obi-Wan and Andor are their own separate things.
Okay.
So there's going to be a film which is going to conclude all of this. So
it's going to conclude?
It's going to conclude all of this.
Interesting.
So if the idea is to get rid of Moff Gideon, and clearly they're setting up Thrawn, and obviously, you know, we'll get Ahsoka later this year, maybe they're trying to build up Thrawn to be the big bad. Because, you know, you literally just said, I don't know who's going to, you know, what word did you say? You said, no one's matching Giancarlo, you know?
Yeah, like as a villain for a potential, like, season four.
Other than Thrawn.
A Mandalorian. Thrawn could, but I feel like they're not going to do that for, like, a season four of Mando. Thrawn is, like, just so big of a name at this point because, like, You're reintroducing him into the mythos through Ahsoka, and to just have him be the season four villain for Mandalorian, I feel like he would be the villain for this movie.
I feel he's going to be all-encompassing at this point. Because I don't think there is a grave threat to the Mandalorians other than maybe the Republic, who, again, I think they're trying to build them up as they're not so nice as, you know, down with the Empire. Well, the Republic's not that great either. There's no real threat. And this kind of also leads to my point of they need to Game of Thrones all this shit.
What does that mean?
So, you know, you alluded to it earlier. Where it was like, if we had all these characters that we were just kind of bouncing around with multiple storylines and multiple character arcs that we see fleshed out through multiple episodes versus let's give this one character one episode. I think they need, I wish the Mandalorian, Ahsoka, and Boba Fett were all just one show.
Oh, that, okay. So some episodes are dedicated to what is Ahsoka doing right now?
But it wouldn't even be the whole episode. It'd literally be like how Game of Thrones does it. Game of Thrones demands you keep up with all these characters in one sitting.
Right, because otherwise, if you dedicate, like, because, like, yeah, it raises the question where we're stuck in a pickle. So, okay, imagine if in Game of Thrones, instead of instead of the story being told that the way Game of Thrones did it, imagine if there was a separate show just focused on Arya. Just Arya.
I probably wouldn't like it.
I think most people would not like. That's not saying we don't like Arya.
No, we love Arya. We love Arya.
But like to dedicate a whole show where it's just her and we're following her on her adventures, I feel like it doesn't have the same weight where you just divvy it up with everyone else the way Game of Thrones does it. But now you're stuck in a pickle with where the Mandoverse is in, where instead of doing it the way that you mentioned it, we're now getting a whole series dedicated to Ahsoka. And I love Ahsoka. I love Ahsoka. Ew. But I'm telling you, that trailer of Ahsoka, I wasn't hyped from anything they showed in that trailer. I'm like, this is weird. I was excited for this, but that trailer did nothing for me. It did nothing for me. And that's a problem because Ahsoka's such a great character. And maybe that's the problem. These characters work in a singular, like cohesive story. Look at Clone Wars. Look at Clone Wars. Perfect example. Clone Wars, I wouldn't say they went completely Game of Thrones. Actually, you know what? No, they did. They did go complete Game of Thrones because you would think Clone Wars would just follow Anakin and Obi-Wan, but right. Clone Wars at multiple times jumps to what's Dooku doing?
Yeah.
What's Darth Maul doing? What's Ahsoka doing? What's what was another character?
Mace Windu. Darth Maul doing? What's Asajj Ventress doing? Yeah,
Instead of just saying, oh my god, we could have an Asajj Ventress show and an Ahsoka show and a Mace Windu show. Just tell these little snippets and get to the point of what story you want to tell, and people are going to remember it a lot more.
Yeah.
No, I think that's the problem with Mandoverse. Yeah, I agree. They should have Game of Thrones did it.
I think so. I think because, again...
Because now you're left with what we just got. What do we think of Boba Fett overall? Like...
Well, I say that, like, well, yes, Boba Fett is a... Everything that works in Boba Fett or works in season 3 of Mando works. However, everything in between that does not per episode is fluff. And imagine removing the fluff and just inserting here's what Boba Fett's doing, the good parts of Boba Fett. Here's what he's doing.
Right.
Here's what Ahsoka's doing. Right.
Instead of giving us a Jack Black and Lizzo planet visit. Yes. They just jump to, well, here's what Ahsoka's doing with, I don't know, Luke. Just, I don't know, progress her story, I guess. Right. Like Game of Thrones.
Right, right. You don't need, because again, I mean, the Lizzo Jack Black episode is the easiest one to pick on.
Yeah. But there's other examples.
Well, just take that stuff out. Jump to Ahsoka. Jump back. Din and Bo-Katan. Talking to wolves, let's fight.
Straight to the point.
And there is still character growth in doing so. It's just like you don't sacrifice.
I don't know what you're getting at.
Just take out the fluff. There's a lot of fluff here. And you don't need fluff. You just need what works and what's good. Play with it. And just keep it one story. Again, we're at a point where it's hard for a lot of people to keep up with all these shows. And keep up with all, you know, these different universes. The MCU. Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Wars Game of becoming Thrones. MCU a little bit.
It's very much becoming MCU.
Like, to the point where it's like, you need to watch Boba Fett to know, to understand where season 3 of Mandalorian is starting off from. Because otherwise, you'll be like, well, how do we end up here? I thought Grogu was with Luke. What happened?
Honestly, literally, if you skip Boba Fett, you start this season, you're like, did he kidnap him from Luke? What happened? Terrible. That's hilarious. And then Ahsoka's going to make you watch Rebels. I am still on my Rebels watch.
When does that show come out, Ahsoka?
I think August.
August, okay. I feel like that show is going to be mid. I don't know. I'm just worried. That trailer did nothing for me. I know people are going to be dumb and be like, oh, but you're not excited about the orange lightsaber? No, I'm not. I'm not excited.
Visually it looks decent. I'll let that show speak for itself.
Right.
I think any final thoughts on Mandalorian season 3?
Definitely not my favorite season of Mando. And that's unfortunate because I know we were always touting the return of Mandalorian as, oh man, this movie sucks, or this Star Wars show sucks. But once Mandalorian comes back, it's gonna put things right. It's gonna remind everyone why it's king.
Yeah.
And I feel like this season did not remind everyone why it's king. I know there will be apologists out there that will say, no, this was the best season ever. That finale, oh my God, when baby Grogu force shielded the fire and it was mom and dad together, Bo-Katan and Din Djarin. That was cool. Don't get me wrong. That was a cool moment, but that doesn't excuse the previous 7 episodes. So I'm whatever to it. It's not my favorite season of Mando, but it wasn't terrible. It's not worse than Boba Fett. That's not saying a lot, but I thought it was fine. I thought it was fine, like average. If I were to put like a number on it, it's like 6 to 7, maybe, which is fine. That's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, I'll
make it through the day watching it.
You can make it through the day too. It's not like turn this off. No, it's not like that.
Right. I don't know. Maybe when you get to the Lizzo planet,
even that
turn this off.
I was just upset about her petting Grogu versus
you're
her
really
actual
like
appearance.
Hooked on that. Well,
he's a child. He's not a pet.
I suppose.
But no, I'm along the same sentiments. It's a step down. I think season 2 was damn near perfect. And season 1 was, if not just a little less great, but both of them were great. Definitely made you kind of revitalize your fandom in Star Wars. And then, yeah, this one was definitely a step down. But again, I gotta give them points for where they deserve it. They are laying foundation for what could be a really good season of Mandalorian. Explore the culture more. Explore the religious sects. Explore, you know, these characters and these different Mandalorians interacting with each other. I think that works for a great show. The Empire and the Republic, two sides of the same coin. Let's see more of that. And then I think the action's great. I don't think they ever slipped on the action.
Yeah, the action was consistent.
Yeah, and I think that finale was really good.
It was really good. When they had that scene where R5 was turning off the shield walls.
Oh, and, very reminiscent, huh?
I mean, that's what it reminded me of, from Phantom Menace. But yes. It was still a good scene, him turning off the shield walls one by one.
R5, the shield!
R5, turn it off! Now
that was good.
Those were good.
Love actually the Din Djarin slide to protect Grogu when he slid and started shooting. He like slid on the ground.
Yeah,
it was nice. He's cool. Like, hands off my kid. I don't know,
he's mine.
Yes,
that's funny. Yeah, it had great moments peppered throughout. Just not as cohesive as the prior seasons.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Probably the last time we'll see Giancarlo as Moff Gideon, unless they do something dumb where it's like a clone survived somewhere and now it's force sensitive. So now it's the same Moff Gideon, but Now he can use the Force. Come here, Grogu. And is my midichlorians to your satisfaction?
Wow.
Look at that.
Very nice. Very nice. It's Star Wars. There's endless possibilities. So yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, yeah, I'm probably like at a 6.5 overall, 7. Yeah. Mm. It's fine. It's fine. I still have a lot of faith in Favreau and Filoni.
They've done more right than wrong. So it's not like I don't want to see them again ever on like anything media. You know, funny enough, in going over our Disney live action fiasco, which if you want to join the discourse on that, check out our Discord. I'm always like, you know, simping Jungle Book as this the greatest Disney live action. I didn't know Jon Favreau directed that.
He did.
And I'm like, wow. What,
you know
what
else he directed though, right?
What?
He directed another one too, another Disney live action.
What other one?
He did The Lion King.
That's an L. No, that's an L. You see, it's a hit or a miss. He either makes you like the best dinner at a 5-star restaurant, or he takes you to McDonald's.
You know what? I just realized Jon Favreau is a lot of times he's 1 for 2.
Yeah.
Look at Iron Man 2.
He directed Iron Man 2.
Damn.
And yeah, Iron Man 1 versus Iron Man 2. He, you know what? Balance. He's all about balance.
Everything must have balance.
Everything must have balance. So he did Iron Man 1. He's like, I got to balance this out. I got to make something shitty. Bam. Iron Man 2.
Well, listen, I look at it like this. If I look at season 1 and 2 as one cohesive season, because you really can't treat it like that, honestly, because it's the story of Grogu. Bam. Right? Mm-hmm. Season 3, pretty weak. Jon Favreau is listed as the creator, right?
Right.
Just him. Filoni's a producer on it. Filoni about to come in and save the day, potentially with this Filoni directed movie of the Mandoverse. So if not, all hope is lost.
All hope is lost.
I mean, I guess Ahsoka will also tell us whether or not all hope is lost as well.
We'll see. God, if they mess up Ahsoka, there's no hope. There's no hope. It just shows it was lightning in a bottle for 2 seasons of Mandalorian. That's it. They can't figure out the formula. It's lost.
You better pray for this freaking Ahsoka show. Because no. if this don't work, then we got nothing but Andor.
Acolyte?
Ooh, Acolyte, you're right.
I don't know. We'll see. Ahsoka should be an easy win, but I don't know.
Oof.
We'll see.
If it is not,
it's so easy. But some people would say Boba Fett too, because he's a fan favorite. And so how that went?
They fumbled that one pretty bad.
Right.
All right. I mean, we'll see. Filoni's directing the first episode of Ahsoka. He directed 3 total. We'll see. That drops in August. But hey, we're Star Wars fans, people, so we're in for it. We need to catch up on Andor, but we're in for it. We're here for it. That wraps things up here on our season 3 deep dive of The Mandalorian. We had a lot of negative things to say. There are some positives sprinkled throughout, but give us a listen. But if you already are giving us a listen, thank you for listening on all your podcast stations, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Thank you for following us on all social media accounts, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Thank you for still continuously following us on Instagram. I'm sorry, TikTok. We're coming back with a vengeance. Preoccupied doing some things. Dr. Jace is over there on Twitch a lot. He's about to start Mega Man, or he already started Mega Man yesterday. So jack me in, Sam.
Gross. Don't you ever.
Go watch him play on Twitch. And then, of course, if you want to join the discourse you hear on the Yonko Table, be sure to click the link below and join the Discord. We're talking a shitstorm about multiple topics. You can join in, get things popping. So we'll see you there. But without further ado, I'm your host, Grandmaster Hoop. Fellow Yonko, Dr. Jason Turney, how should we close this one out?
This is the way.
Uh-oh. Okay. I was going to say some stupid rule, and then you have to say this is the way.
Bo-Katan Kryze.
Din Grogu.
All right, that's enough.
This is the way.